Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
Welcome back to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. I do hope you're well. We've got a great guest in the studio who's going to be sharing her story on episode 102, and it is somebody who's very familiar with the Radio City Tower as we stand aloft Liverpool City Centre from the top of St John's Beacon. There wasn't always a radio station here, as Angela Preston is about to explain. Angela, great to see you. Thank you for your time.
You're very welcome. Great to be here, Mick.
This is a strange coincidence, or maybe it's appropriate that you're here today. So you came up here when it was a restaurant.
I did.
Have you got fond memories of it as a restaurant?
I have. I'm still married. My husband didn't throw me off the top.
So this was a date?
This was our first date. And God rest my friend's soul. She was actually, 17 years dead on, or 15 years dead on Saturday. And she came on the date with me, just for Dutch courage, really, because I was only young. I was only 14. And, you know, your first date, and we're still together, 37 years later.
Can you remember what you ate?
No, I think we only got a cup of tea because I think I got a Diet Coke and my friend got a cup of tea. And Barry probably had a pint because he was old enough then, he was 18. But I think it was nerves. I think it was just nerves. So I never seen him then. I had that first date of 14, 17, nearly 18 he was. And then I never seen him again till I was 19. I went on a couple of dates with him, never seen him for 4 or 5 years. And then I met up with him again at 19. And we've been together ever since, and we've got 3 sons.
There we go. Well, the place has changed a little bit.
It certainly has. Well, there's windows now. There was no windows. So I think if he'd have known then what he knows now, I'd have probably been over the top.
Yeah. But for the record, there were always windows on this ground floor.
On the top.
It's a top floor, yeah.
And I did, a comedy course here as well with Sam Avery.
Of course.
So that was 4 years ago. And that was on this floor, I think that was, actually, because we actually came down and had a look at the studio.
Now, it's great to get you on the programme today, Angela. You're an author. You've done the comedy stuff.
Yeah.
You do radio stuff. You do the broadcasting. You're looking to do a bit of TV stuff.
I am.
As well. Your life as it stands now, very different to the life that you had. You've had sort of another career.
I did.
Which came to an end. And actually, your previous career and how it came to an end is part of your journey. Where should we start? Should we start at the start of your first career? Because you were in for 25 years.
25 years, yeah. I was in finance and it was a well-known doorstep company. And I was an area manager. And I was sort of, a troubleshooter, for want of a better word. I went around locations around the Northwest and I turned them around. And I upskilled the individuals and brought team spirit, really. And I did that for 20, nearly 20 years. And then in 2012, we got a new divisional manager who wanted a little bit more than results in the branch. And without going into too much detail, a little bit like the Harvey Weinstein saga, what's recently been very much talked about in the media, he made a pass at me. And because I refused, I then got sort of a dog's life for 2 years, and it went on for 2 years where I had a breakdown, and suicide was the only option for me really at that time, because I just wanted peace of mind, because I didn't know what I was going into the job to. And, you know, I was on a fantastic salary and I come from quite a very poor, humble background. So to be doing the job that I was doing, I was privileged and I was, you know, really delighted that I could be put in front of, you know, to be earning that kind of money. And to have to walk away from that and not really know what way to go was quite difficult to do, but I had to find the courage from somewhere to make that decision.
That change from having a career, a successful career, to the incident and then the repercussions of the incident, that new mindset that you had after that, was that a combination of all those factors that you thought that you had life nailed, that, you know, things are going well, and then suddenly everything gets thrown up in the air?
Yeah, everything is sort of flipped the other way, because I've always been a very positive, happy person who was always wants to be the best version of me. And losing all of that, I didn't really know what to do. And I sat on the couch for 6 weeks just crying, and because this man had destroyed every fibre in my body, that the only option for me was sort of to just finish my life, you know, because I thought, where can I go from here? The skills that I'd learnt, and on a daily basis in there, I was managing a £9 million turnover, and to be responsible for that, and then for it to just suddenly disappear, it was a hard pill to swallow, and at that time, I thought, what can I do to get over this? What can I, where can I channel my energy? Because I lost all of that. I was always full of energy and I had no energy. And I thought, how can I get this back? So I looked, whilst I was in that company, I'd met a guy who was a motivational speaker, a guy called Malcolm Lewis. And he was very, very good. He went around companies and motivated teams, or, big companies, corporate companies. And when I looked at him on stage, I thought, I do very much what he does, but on a smaller scale, and I'd like to do that one day. So I researched on how to become a motivational speaker, and that's where it started. And part of it was Brendan Burchard. I found his website, and his instructions was to write a book. My husband had said to me a few weeks before, why don't you write a book of growing up in the 80s, with Margaret Thatcher was in power then, and it... Liverpool was a poor city and it was difficult as a kid growing up then. And I said, well, who would want to listen and read my story? Well, I was completely surprised then, as I read Brendan Burchard's, to build your credibility, you have to write it down what you've done. If you're going to help people become the best version of them, I had to have something different from every other coach and motivational speaker. So I decided to try my luck at writing. The only writing I'd done before was lines when I was in school and reports for the job I was in. So I started writing my thoughts down. I thought, someone could benefit from this book. And I'd read The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. That was to sort of help me. I was looking for something spiritual and I was looking to go to India for a retreat just to find me again. And that this book came up, and I thought, I'm definitely going to write this book now.
So there was a sense, even though you were going through those very, very dark times, that there was another you waiting to get out.
Yeah.
There was still something there. The old you was in there just trying to find a way forward. And actually, to feel the way you did, but then to think motivational speaking, there'd be a lot of people like, well, that's a big leap.
Yeah.
There's one thing getting off the sofa and getting back outside. There's another thing thinking, right, I'm going from this point to almost wanting to put yourself in front of other people.
I had a point to prove, and I thought, how many more people are suffering like me? How many more people have been through this trauma and have not had a voice? And I was annoyed at that time, and I'm going to be very honest, I was angry, I was annoyed. I had every emotion going on in my body to think, how dare this man come along? I'd work for this company for 25 years, I'd give them my best years, and how dare this man come up? Because I was hurt in the beginning, but then the anger set in. And that's when I channeled it into, I want to help other people overcome trauma and challenges they face. How can I do that? And that's when I decided to, I'd like to do what Malcolm Lewis does, but on a bigger scale. So the first book really was to help me overcome it. And then I gave myself a year, because it's important. I've been writing Girls Down since I was 5. And it was really dreams and wishes at that time. But as I got older, it became goals, and that's what I drew on to sort of be able to put the book together. And from that first book, I started blogging, and I was approached by Jeffrey Hazlett, the CEO of the C-Suite Network in New York, and he asked me to go over and do a TV and book launch in New York for him. And to stand in New York less than 2 years after being at death's door, because I actually had the tablet in my hand ready to take, and it was only the faces of my husband and my sons that stopped me actually doing it. I was needed at, the most important job for me has always been a mum. And if I'd have gone, what message would I have been sending to my sons? So when he approached me and asked me about this TV and book launch, I thought, how can I go from that to that in such a short space of time? But I did, and it changed my life forever, because from that interview, my second book was born.
That resilience that you obviously had within you, that's obviously set you in a very good stead, if you like, in terms of the work you're doing, the confidence that you build over decades doing a good job. I think for a lot of people listening to this, maybe who have gone through emotional trauma, that their life gets flipped upside down for whatever reason. The fact that you were able so, 2 years is a long time, to be able to find that pathway to turn it around. Is that something now when you speak to people that you put across? Because there's plenty of people listening to this programme who think, I'm going through that and I can't see how that changes. I can't see the moment where things change. I can't see the equivalent version of you traveling to New York, you know, to launch a book. It's too far beyond their mindset because of the way the situation has fallen on them.
You've got to do it day by day, because in amongst that 2 years, I had days where I stayed in bed all day and cried and cried and cried. And that you need to do that, because that's recovery and you need to find that time to recover. And in those days that I spent in that bed crying, I also wrote. And wrote and wrote, and then I'd put my thoughts down of how I felt that day, and then I'd also blog on it on LinkedIn and stuff. And that sort of, it's just those little steps that you take. It's the mindfulness. You know, I did a mindfulness course also to help me. It wasn't about, you've got to put the past behind you and not think of the future. You've got to be in the present moment and say, do you know what, I'm going to make today a good day. And I always tell all my clients, it only ever lasts for 24 hours. Tomorrow's a new day and it's your choices. You live and die by your choices. And I was never going to be a victim. Once I had a clear mindset of where I wanted my life to go, I decided this man has took my past, he's took my present, and he's certainly not taken my future. And that's what people have got to think. If they're going through a difficult time, think about what you want out of this, because there's always light at the end of the tunnel.
So the first book, Opening Doors.
Yeah.
Was it a bit of a relief when you wrote it? And then people wanted to publish it. Yeah. People liked it. Because I think that will be the other thing that I guess for a lot of people, there'd be great therapy in putting everything down into, you know, a computer or a laptop.
Yeah.
There's another thing, somebody reading it and going, actually, I want other people
to
read this. Were you surprised?
Shocked. Beyond belief, completely shocked. Because
but what did they say to you about, was it the way you'd written it? Was it that it just fit, you know, a moment, or it was perfect for the time?
I think with exactly what we're talking about now, personal development and mindfulness had just started to sort of come to the forefront in the world, in society, because people are realising that stress is a major factor in people's well-being and in companies, in personal lives, in relationships, everything. So I probably brought my book out at the right time. So when I got in touch with three publishers, all three of them wanted that book, because it tells my journey of coming from a very poor background, making it, you know, and being successful as an area manager and earning a fantastic standard of living, to go then to lose everything. You know, lose my way in life. I didn't know how to be a woman anymore. I didn't know how to be a mum. I didn't know how to be a wife. I lost everything. You know, the best place for me was, and safety, was to sit at home. But then one day, something snapped in my mind and I thought, this cannot continue. My husband said he didn't know what he was walking into. He used to dread. And I get quite emotional when I think about that, because I know how bad I felt, but it must have been worse for him, because he didn't know what he was going to walk into. He says when he put the key in the door and he heard noises, relief came that I was okay. And that must have been difficult for him to do. But, you know, without his support, I would never have come through it.
Can I ask you about the, you mentioned sexual harassment within the workplace. I think there's a narrative around that. You mentioned Harvey Weinstein, and it's very much been a case of, look what men are capable of within a workplace environment. Maybe there hasn't been so much of a focus of what are the impacts on women of this sort of behavior. It's often seen as, you know, here's the bad guy and the victims of the bad guy, but it's not often we say right, how do those victims feel now? What are the long-term impacts and long-term damage that can be caused by that sort of behavior? As well, as you've traveled the world talking about the book, has that been a question that you get asked?
Yeah, it you do regularly get asked about how you've overcome it and what impact it had on you as an individual, also as your family, because this didn't just affect me, it affected my husband and sons in a big way, because they didn't know what type of mum they were going to come home to. Two of my sons were working in America at the time and the eldest lived in London. They didn't know what they were coming back to, because I was up and down. You know, it was like I suddenly developed bipolar. They didn't know what type of person they were going to walk into. The impact is astronomical in terms of confidence, self-esteem, how you put yourself out there. You can't hold a conversation. So it affects every fibre of your body, and trust, which was a massive, I still to this day sometimes find it hard to trust men and wonder what their, you know, what their agenda is, because he started off, for me, he was grooming me And I didn't realise that at the time. And I look back now and think, I've never been naive in my whole life, but I was naive to that man. And that's what worried me, that he could do that.
When you see, you know, the hashtag Me Too, for a lot of people, you know, to dismiss it in the same way they dismiss many other hashtags, but actually what you're describing there is the realities of what that
the impact it has, yeah,
actually means. And we're talking about, you know, someone almost driven to the point of considering suicide, the impacts on your life, family life,
yeah,
changing career and everything that comes from it.
I mean,
well,
I was 46 and had to walk away from a career that I thought I would have got carries out in a box, if you like, because I skipped into work every day until this man arrived. And to have to make that decision to walk away from that and look for a new career, that was a tough question that I had to ask myself every single day. But when I looked in the mirror on the 10th of May 2014, it's edged in my memory that it was a stranger looking back at me, and the person that I'd always been was gone. And I had to make that decision for the sake of my own health and for the sake of my marriage, because it was affecting my marriage, and the only decision was to walk away. So people don't realise the damage it does do. And that was the reason I wrote the play also, because I wanted people to see how bad it is. I wanted this individual to see the impact he'd done, and those other perpetrators that walk this earth that do that and think it's only banter. Is it banter if it's your wife or your daughter, your mum? Would it be banter then? It's not banter. It's people's lives that they're affecting, and they're not considering the damage or the danger that it can put someone in.
In terms of the work that you do now, you're about to do a TV course.
I am.
Do community radio. You put a play on as well, telling this story. You've got multiple books. You've got a children's book that's on its way as well.
The children's book's written. That is the Ronnie the Rabbit's Adventure. That's to help children get over the loss of a loved one. You know, that's a bereavement book. But it's also about leadership, because this little rabbit, Ronnie, gets taken out of the field and the other rabbits have to survive without him. So it's got two messages in there. There's also forgiveness and greed. So there's a number of messages actually in the book. And again, I just think that you should try everything. You know, I didn't know I could write a book, and I've suddenly written three books and a play, and I'm just about to embark on a TV presenting course, which I think, you know, everyone should try anything, because you never know what you can do.
But obviously you're finding that actually your ways of getting your story out there and lessons from that story aren't just about telling it in one form. It's about telling it in different forms, yeah. Put it on a stage, put it in a, you know, a kid's story through. And we had Jean Taylor actually on the program a number of weeks ago from Families Fighting for Justice.
Yeah, I've worked with Jean.
There's been people going, yeah, come on board.
Yeah.
Do that. People want to hear this story.
Of course they do, because people don't realise how bad it is out there. And when they hear this story, sometimes it triggers something in them that they've faced, because it will be a different things. You know, I had a friend from Birmingham who was in, you know, and she won't mind me saying this, she was in a really bad marriage, and she came to my play on the 10th of November. She walked away from that marriage the next day and she's never gone back. Because she realised she was going through the same thing in that marriage. So it might not be work. It might be in a personal sense, you know. And if that can give someone the courage to make that decision, you know, this is my life. We should only be in control of our own lives, not everybody else's. It should just be our lives. And that's what the message is. But the message is also, don't put up with it. Make your decision, you know, and be a voice for others. I have chose to be a voice for the voiceless, because I lost my voice for 2 years and I wasn't losing it any longer. This man had taken everything I'd worked for.
I think that one of the things, and you talk about motivational speaking, sometimes some people, depending on which websites they're looking at, think motivational speaking is basically, come on, everybody, yeah, you can do
Tony
it.
Tony Robbins.
Basically, it's basically like, work a bit harder, make more money, and increase your productivity. And that's what people consider to be motivational. You're talking about something very...
It's inspirational also. You know, it is motivational, but it's saying to people, you don't have to stay in this mode that you're in. Change is hard, and it's as hard as you make it. But it's up to you. It's easy as you make it also. You know, in those early days, I found it really hard to change, because I was in that mindset of being a victim. But then I looked at it and thought, what can I get from this? What can I help others overcome with this? Because it's not just about you, it's about other people as well. If you can help someone else overcome it, then I have achieved everything I've set out to achieve. You know what, now I've just said to you on off air, and I'll say it again, I'd probably shake his hand now because I'm doing a much more rewarding job. I'm doing a purposeful job. I feel like I'm doing the job that I was put on this earth to do. So I'd probably thank him for it. I work with HSBC and I deliver motivational talks every 3 months. I do it in Liverpool for HSBC, and now I've just started doing it in Manchester. I go to London, you know, I'm actually out there helping people, and I do a lot of free stuff because I think when you're being given a gift, you should share it. And if people can't afford it, then I will give it for free for people who need it.
So you got the original book and then you did a sequel.
I did The Keys to Success in Business because in that book, when I read The Secret, then they brought The Power out and I read The Power. It was a sequel to The Secret. So I realised in Opening Doors was lessons to become the leader within. So I wrote the 10 lessons that I've learned from that and the 10 keys, which is the 10 keys to success in business or in personal life, because we're all leaders within ourselves. Before we lead anyone, we have to lead ourselves. And that is, the book is about leading yourself before you can even begin to lead others.
Have you sort of reassessed sort of your early career? You had a job that you loved, doing something that you loved, but actually you're doing something now which you love, but it's more about you and people as opposed to being for...
Oh, very much.
No, for a company.
Yeah.
But then that's kind of the path you got. You work for a company, don't you? You work hard for that company and then you get the benefits from it, hopefully. Yeah. You're now putting that into both yourself and into other people.
Very much so, because I deliver a presentation called The 3 P's. I regularly deliver this to companies and it's people, passion and purpose. And when you link all three together, sparks fly. Now, when I was in that company, I thought I was really, you know, I was getting a source of feeling great about getting results. But it was getting results through people that made me feel good, realising that I was helping them to build, the skill from within to become better at being them and finding new ways for them to work. And a few people were promoted under my leadership. So that for me was my greatest success. Never about what I achieved in the job. It was always about people and linking that. And that's when I left the company. That's what made me realise it wasn't about getting results and objectives for the company. It was about seeing the growth and development in the people that was working under my leadership. That's what it was about. And that's what whilst I'm teaching and coaching them, I'm also learning new skills myself.
What do your family say about what you do now?
Some of them don't really understand what I do. They think, she's off on another journey somewhere. We're lost with her. But my ultimate goal is to open schools in India, in Pakistan, and in around Asia, all around it, because I believe every child deserves an education. And I've got a friend in Birmingham who's a doctor and they've opened a school in Pakistan, so I'm doing a little bit of work with her and I'm looking to open my own. I've got to become a millionaire, Mike, by the time I'm 55 to open this school.
Yeah, you and me both. I can have a few quid if I get that far too.
Yeah, so you can help me with my school, but I work in schools in Liverpool at the moment and that's also getting me ready to open the school. My first school I'd like to open is in India, and that's my biggest goal, because I do believe as adults it's up to ourselves to drive ourselves. As children, sometimes they don't have the role model in their lives to help them become the person they want to become. And as a mum, there's no greater, rewards than seeing your children doing the job that they love and being healthy and successful.
I'll tell you what, if we see in about 20, 30 years' time, a lot of Indian kids with a Scouse accent,
all
fully
in
motivated, will absolutely know where they came from. So, Angela, you've also set the AngelaPrestonCoaching.com website as well, where people can find out more information about the work that you do. What sort of feedback do you get from people now?
Mainly with HSBC and the kids in the school, the kids just love, because I do different stuff with the kids. And the feedback I get is they didn't really understand about self-esteem and confidence. This is the kids. So where they will be on one path, it can take them on the right path, because a lot of kids join gang culture. I'm actually doing a play with the kids called Choose a Life, Not a Knife at the moment in the school. And these same kids have chosen to walk away from gangs because they've realised the confidence it gives them. They don't need to make those choices. They can make their own choices in life and choose what kind of life they want. So from the school side, it's all about the positivity and how they've changed the path that they were on. In terms of adults, the inspiration that they get from it is that I've given them clarity in their life, whether it be in personal or business. You know, my friend in Birmingham was a prime example. She decided to walk away from this toxic marriage because she'd seen what I'd done in the play and realised the effect it was having on her. And in other, you know, my own clients will walk away and they'll meet their objectives in their own businesses or personal life.
I've got to ask you about work-life balance. Have you got work-life balance at the moment? Because you seem that busy.
I have. Do you know, Sunday is my day with my husband and then I do the radio on the Sunday evening. But because now I was working in that company 70 hours a week and I've transferred it over to my own company. But I have a day off in the week so we can go away for a night. We're not big drinkers. We go away for little nights away and so I do have work-life balance. And we've just booked our Christmas lodge for me and my husband and the son. So I have great work-life balance.
And you're already making plans for next Christmas.
I am.
Tells me your forward planning is absolutely on point as well. You do it's a community radio station as well. What are they called?
They're called Access Northwest. I do a business show on a Thursday, 7 till 9, and that's a day in the life of anyone who, you know, who's got a business. And I do a motivational show called the Get Up and Go Show on a Sunday evening, and that's 6 till 8, and that I bring on different guests. They tell their stories, very similar to what we're doing here. They tell the stories and they tell us how they've overcome the difficult times in their lives, and that helps our listeners to deal with whatever they're dealing with at the time. It's just little tips that people need, you know. We give them tools and techniques to walk away and say, you know, that has helped me move forward in this part of my life.
And you got another book. So the kids' book is coming out. I've got all these.
The kids' book
down.
Is out. So I've got, at the moment, I've got Opening Doors, The Keys to Success in Business, and Ronnie the Rabbit's Adventure. They're all out. And I'm working on a Time to Leave book to coincide with the play. And I've also got a novel called A Better Me. And they're both due out next year.
But apart from that, it's all quiet on the Angela Preston front.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's
Angela,
all quiet.
Thank you so much for coming on the programme today. It's been great to get you on. It's great to see that you're involved in so many different things. You're a multimedia sensation.
Thank you, mate.
So your story will be included in our podcast as well. And we'll get links up on the social media to your website as well, if that suits you as well. AngelaPrestonCoaching.com for more on Angela's story. It's been great to get you on the programme.
Thank you for your time.
Ain't not a problem at all. It is Radio City. So if you want to get involved in the show, I'd love to hear your emails. Drop us an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.